is Lou here? He was here. Before I get started with the report, Logan wanted to make a few comments.
Thanks, Lou. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to introduce someone. I forgot to do that on Tuesday. Natalie Berthium, who has taken Sheila Jarnes' place as our outreach and education coordinator, who's in the audience standing up. I just wanted to introduce her to the council. She'll be taking over and building on the foundation that Sheila has developed for us, so welcome to her. Thanks.
excuse me. In your binder, I think you have the report from the June 5th enforcement meeting. I'm going to have a little PowerPoint that has summary of those items we discussed. First one, next slide, please. I'm not very technical, sorry. First, we discussed the enforcement policy, and you have a copy of our current policy, which was actually developed in 2007 by OLE, U.S. Coast Guard, and GCNE. In front of that, you have the revised precepts, they're called now, that the three organizations have developed this year. And actually, that copy you have in your binder was revised somewhat after discussion at the enforcement meeting. So the enforcement committee recommends that the council accept these precepts to replace its current enforcement policy. And I guess one of the committee members could make a motion to that effect or discuss it.
Am I looking at the wrong thing? I'm a little confused on this.
In the binder under on the status, you'll see there's four items under information, the report, followed by the enforcement precepts of 2013, which are the proposed replacement for what is number three, the enforcement considerations in 2007, which this council adopted as its enforcement policy. They're very similar. If you want to walk through them, we could do that.
I think if we're going to ask the council to accept them, we need to walk through them.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. You want me to walk through them?
Yes, please.
Okay, sure. First section, the preface is very similar to what we already have. General precepts are similar as well. They've been updated with more current management approaches, like sectors, which was most of the discussion during the meeting. Basic guidelines like simplify regulations, reduce the number of regulations, account for and trace fishery products, use vessel monitoring systems, which is, of course, expanded, observers, and observers are not law enforcement personnel. That's something we've always made a point of. Appropriate penalties. GCNE has a penalty schedule based on the severity of a violation as well as the number of previous violations. Most of the revision comes in the next section, overview of general enforcement operations, which has types of management measures, such as area enforcement, gear enforcement, prohibited species enforcement. The management measures matrix is pretty much the same as it is in our current policy. They added the line for sectors, and they show that enforcement of sectors is limited at dockside. At-sea boarding and surveillance by aircraft and ships are pretty much unusable as enforcement of sector quotas. We had some discussion about that, and I think in the I'll continue through the types of management measures. Landing limits, they have advantages, disadvantages, and recommendations. Possession limits, prohibited species, requiring retention, which there were some revisions there. And size restrictions, area restrictions, closed seasons, and gear vessel size efficiency restrictions, record keeping reporting. And the final, I guess, since we made most of our comments on the final section, sectors and catch shares, and that was basically the new section that was added to this. What the enforcement committee added was at the bottom of recommendations, uniform sector exemptions across all sectors would obviously be easier to enforce than having different exemptions for each or groups of sectors. And these aren't hard and fast rules. These are just recommendations for making things simpler for enforcement to deal with. VMS should be considered for all LAPs, limited fishing to one broad stock area unless an observer is on board. Of course, that's a balance between the necessity of industry operations. But if you can restrict trips, for instance, to this is a haddock trip in the Gulf of Maine, even that's simpler than if people can go up and down the coast and change gears and that kind of thing, which is pretty much what we have, I think, currently. Require dockside monitors with authority to conduct hold checks. I know that's been a controversy in the past, but that's still there needs to be some kind of corroboration of sector landings and reporting. Require the use of waymasters and fish landing windows. And then that's followed by the current policy that we accepted. You'll see that on that page 53, enforcement policy, we just have a paragraph saying we've used this following document, enforcement considerations from October 2007, as our enforcement policy. And so we're proposing to do the same thing and take their updated precepts. So I guess probably the best would be if anybody has any questions, any specifics in any of these sections, because there are a lot of sections, we could just discuss those.
I'm going to start with Mary Beth.
Thank you. I'm just curious, Lou, how often is this policy reviewed?
I think the enforcement policy previous to 2007 was probably 97 or 98, about 10 years. Then OLE, Coast Guard, and GCNE got together and revised them. And they came up with their own proposal for us, and we accepted that. And now they've done it again. I think they plan on doing this more frequently as new management schemes become used or more prevalent. But for instance, the old policy had nothing on sectors or that kind of thing.
And I asked that question. It's interesting to me, and I wish I could say I sat down and read this, thoughtfully before this discussion, but I have not. But there's not a section on safety, and I understand that, you know, this is an attempt to look at enforceability of regulations, and safety might be another issue. But when you look at the pros and cons or disadvantages of you know, different tools here, it does seem like that it would be worthwhile to have some mention of, you know, the implications to safety at sea. And I'm wondering if the committee had any discussion about that.
David and Terry and Mark could comment on that. There weren't any specific comments on safety in these precepts. Safety is always a consideration, I think, in, at least in the enforcement meetings I've been at. And possibly it'd be useful to have a safety policy as well. But it's not in here specifically, and it's not being developed at this point.
Well, maybe members of the committee could comment, because it does seem to me that it would be worthwhile to be explicit in the document.
John Quinn. I'm sorry, Terry.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to Mary Beth's question. I don't think we discussed safety at all that I remember that particular day. I think it's a worthwhile addition to this for sure, but Dave might have a different take on it, or Mark.
Dave.
Yeah, I think you should keep in mind with this document, this is an enforceability document. It's to what makes regulations more enforceable or easier to enforce, as opposed to what makes them more difficult to enforce, and that's what it lists. It lists the advantages and disadvantages of various management measures and how they relate to enforceability. So I don't really see how safety exactly enters into this. I mean, obviously, the people who enforce the rules have to be safe when they're doing it, if that's something somebody wants to add or something. But I think that's still on an ad hoc case-by-case basis. I mean, there are times when the Coast Guard pulls alongside you, as an example, and you say, it's too rough for a boarding. You want to follow me in and board me at the pier, that's fine. But I don't think it's safe for your people or mine to have these two boats crashing into each other. Anyway, again, to get back to what this exactly is a list of various measures that are used in fisheries management and how it relates to the ability to enforce those management measures.
John Quinn and Tom Neese.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know it's been a very tumultuous couple years in the enforcement business, and I wonder if these new precepts take into account all of the very strong recommendations in the Swarthmore reports that came out over the last couple of years, if you know.
I wouldn't. Logan probably would have a better feel for what was used in specifically in these precepts. Personally, I thought they were, you know, better constructed and worded, and had elements that weren't in the previous ones.
Okay.
Thank you. The Swartwood report or reports really have little, if anything, really to do with this document, because the premise, like Dave said, the premise of this document is to give the council some considerations to look at when they're considering regulations as to what is more enforceable and what is less enforceable, to the extent practicable. You know, if you can use it, use it. If you cannot, then, you know, we'll have to deal with it. That's all this document really does. The way it was created was we basically took the old precepts, which were adopted, I guess, 2007, and a lot of it is stylistic changes, some rewording of some sentences, and the adding of information on sectors. And we do plan to review these more frequently than before. So I hope that answers the question.
Let me just follow up, because I beg to differ. I know I'm not banging at you, but one of these sections in here talks about the appropriate penalties. And one of the big findings in that report was that the excessive penalties were assessed in order to gain leverage in negotiations. So there's a whole section on appropriate penalties. And just by way of background, I practiced in this area for many, many years in New Bedford, so I'm quite familiar with some of the excessive penalties that were used as leverage, and that's what the Swarthmore report said. So yeah, there is a big section that talks directly to the penalty schedule.
Right. So the Office of General Counsel Enforcement Section has a new penalty schedule that is published. It's a public document. Basically, it works on the premise of that there are mitigating and aggravating factors for violations. But nothing in this document says that penalties should be inordinately high in order to gain some sort of leverage. So it really doesn't address penalties, just more to say that, you know, they should be, you know, commensurate with the offense.
Yeah, and I'm not big. I know you're relatively new to the department, but there's clearly talks about in this section that. And then just the second question or declarative statement. One of the things that I found in these cases is that there's no statute of limitations on the government to bring an action, in a civil action. So what happens oftentimes is, and it's been in the past, I'm not saying currently, but that magically another potential violation appears, which bangs up the penalty assessed. So, again, it's not in this document, but I've never had a chance to say it in public, so I wanted to make sure that that was on the record. Thank you.
Tom Neese.
Lou, I was looking at the fishery enforcement management measure enforceability matrix, and I'm a little curious whether the committee talked about whether at-sea boardings or surveillance could be used to verify fishing locations. You know, one of the issues that's been raised over the last few months is whether vessels are accurately reporting where they catch. And it would seem that both aircraft and ship surveillance or at-sea boardings would help provide a source of information to verify locations where vessels fished, which could then be linked up with their VTRs to see if they actually reported accurately. And I'm just curious if the committee considered that as perhaps a limited use, which would help with both record-keeping reporting and arguably under sectors and catch shares, both blocks where the matrix says there's no value from surveillance or at-sea boarding.
Yeah, excuse me. There was some discussion about that. Mostly observers or at-sea monitors were looked at as sources of that type of information. Of course, not using observers as enforcement personnel would mean that you would have to take their basic report and incorporate that into your other information to determine, you know, where someone was fishing for what and with what gear, if they were using various gears or fishing for different species, which most are. As far as boardings, I'm sure that every Coast Guard boarding is recorded and you know, that information is kept, where it was done, what was observed, if there were any violations, what was checked. The issue or the problem has been, and we discussed this at the meeting somewhat, was all these different sources of information don't necessarily all come together in one place immediately. Some of them don't match up, for instance, dealers and logbooks or electronic information. And that makes it difficult for the enforcement to use that information to establish a case. If all that stuff did come in and was immediately accessible and could be looked at comprehensively, then enforcement would be in a much better situation as far as using it to see what's really going on. And even if they can't establish a case with it, they can at least observe certain types of behavior by people who may be violating and then you know, be able to deal with those situations.
Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I mean, and the Coast Guard knows exactly where we are all the time, because a lot of times if you're not answering up your radio, they'll start calling you. they'll call the boat at such coordinates, and if you don't answer the radio, they'll call your boat by name. You know, so I mean, they know where we are and they know who we are when they're calling us. So I mean, that must be getting recorded. You know, every time a Coast Guard ship passes us. So I mean, it might be another tool for comparing them to the VTR.
Further questions on the presentation? Terry.
Did you have a question, Dave? I was just going to make a motion.
I just wanted to comment to a couple of the questions that were asked. If you do look in the beginning here under the general precepts, there are some specific statements here that the committee supported that are changes from the old policy. They may be relatively minor changes, but they are changes. So it does specifically say reduce the number of regulations, which is something we have tried to do on a very limited basis here with very little success. To John Quinn's point in the appropriate penalties, it says enforced in a fair and consistent manner, which again is an outgrowth of that Smartwood report where penalties were not consistent. They were often very inconsistent. So the committee spent quite a bit of time. They went through this document pretty carefully, and the changes we requested were made. There were some statements that were a little vague or hard to understand. All those changes were completed, to my knowledge. I read the updated report, and I'm as an individual, I'm satisfied that what needed to be said here has been said.
Terry Alexander.
With that, I'm going to move. I guess, am I moving on behalf of the committee, or am I moving on me?
It's not a committee motion, so you would make the motion as a committee member. We'll get somebody to second it.
Yeah. Motion that the council accept the enforceability precepts 2013, maybe.
And that's seconded by Dave Gaethel. I think after as presented, I think this date is redundant. Discussion on the motion. We go to the public. Any comments on that? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor. -15 The motion carries. Are there any other action items under enforcement? Terry Alexander.
Well, Frank had asked me to read this because he left. But he read them this morning during the habitat discussion about the ground cable. So we did pass motion in the committee that said there is significant concern about the enforceability of no ground cable restrictions. And number two that we passed, there is interest in further information on the reduced impact raised ground cables to study their enforceability. So, I mean, I don't know if we can act on those. They just seem like a statement to me.
I don't believe that those have any request for council action in them. It's a statement of the committee. So if there is no further action under this, I have been asked to have a member of the public speak to us. Wally, if you want to come up, it's an issue that relates to enforcement, and we'll take the public comments.
Good morning. For all of you council members and chairman, my name is Wallace Gray. I'd like to take a minute to thank you for letting me speak today. I have come today to speak to all of you about an issue that's been weighing heavy on my heart and mind. In December, my boat went down all hands, one being my youngest son and the other a close friend. I've come to believe that our government, NOAA, and this council has a great opportunity to do something good for all the fishermen in this time of turmoil. I believe if we look at the VMS program as a life-saving program, along with everything it already does, we could make a difference in saving fishermen's lives. If the VMS program could make a computer-generated phone call when the VMS on a fishing vessel goes offline, is no longer pinging to the Coast Guard, and by having quick information sent to the Coast Guard, that they could go out and do their jobs of saving lives. The closer you get to the time of an incident, with knowledge of that information to the Coast Guard, the better they can do their job. I didn't think of this until, you know, I've gone through this tragedy, you know, and I believe right now, you know, it isn't that. Should we do it? I think our dead fishermen deserve the response of us taking this on as a responsibility as a generation and for future generations. You know, that's my statement, but, you know, life-saving, you know, first we depend on the EPIB. My EPIB didn't go off. So that line of, you know, that is gone. So the last five boats have sunk out of Gloucester. The EPIBs have not worked. That is another issue that I don't think we can look at here, but the VMS program is a computer-generated program. It does takes by pounds. I have a general category scholar boat. It takes my pounds away from me when I leave the dock. I send in my pre-land report that replaces that. The deal report replaces that. It's all done by a computer. Why can't the computer program be written that when a boat's VMS goes offline, that they do a computer-generated phone call to the Coast Guard, give the position, name of the boat, what they're fishing for, and all the pertinent information the Coast Guard would need to make the difference. You know, it may be just something a computer broke, but it may be the boat's gone down. If the Coast Guard had the information about my vessel on Saturday when the incident happened instead of Monday, you know, it was flat calm Saturday. We didn't get the information. I got it Monday. It was blowing 50 easterly Monday. It hampered. We lost 2 days. It comes down to, you know, I'm putting a gravestone on a grave with no body. I don't think it would have changed the outcome of my situation, but I may have had a body to bury. And it's very important. You know, I'm going to spend the rest of my life fighting this cause to promote safety, you know, to get response quick to our fishermen. They deserve it. 20 years from now, when I look at my grandson, he's 3 years old right now, and he's named after his father, which is named after me. And he's going to ask me, what did you do to help solve this problem? I want to have an answer and say I did everything within my power to change the mindset of the community to put life-saving above everything else. All the information as far as law enforcement will still be there. It isn't going to go away. We just as a group and for future generations, this has to be a mindset, a change of the way people look at fishermen. If we have a chance to save somebody's life with the technology, and the technology is only going to get better, is something we need and must do. I thank you very much for listening to me, and I hope you take in consideration what I've said here today.
Wally, what I am going to do as chair is request that staff craft a letter to the regional office requesting them to look into the capabilities to get this done. Mm-hmm. As you and I talked earlier, this is not something we have direct control over, mm-hmm. but we can certainly make a request to them to look into the ability to get it done.
Thank you. I thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Council, for hearing me today.
Anything else under enforcement? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I just call the committee, the council's attention to the report here on hidden compartments. This is a, I'm not saying it's a new development. They may have been here for a long time, but it's something that seems to be have been uncovered with increasing frequency here recently. Has obviously potentially serious implications. So I hope you'll take a look at it. They're described at the meeting as ranging from, you know, the Yugos to the Escalades of hidden compartments. But it indicates an issue. When you see something like this occurring, it indicates that something's going on that is going to need to be dealt with.
Anything else under enforcement? Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that same subject because there was some comment, I guess Drew. I think Drew made some comments about not only are they, could you hide scallops in them, but you could hide extra cutters in them to cut more scallops, than having an unfair advantage to the other people. And he said there is some concern that that's going on now. So just so people would be aware.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think we will break for lunch at this point. We're going to see if we can get back to reconvene at 1:30.